We just finished a series about the realms of consciousness, the levels that we work through to get to spiritual maturity, to me, by me, through me, as me. Those talks are now online. If you missed any, go to the homepage of the website and just scroll down until you get to the podcasts. As me is the way Jesus lived. It was the divine expressing as him all the time. And Jesus said that's possible for us. The life force, the source energy, God, expresses as you. It's who you are. So what's stopping us from living that way? Well, ego or personality, our culture, conditioning, mass consciousness. I see people working really hard to practice spiritual principles in daily life. And I've noticed they keep getting stuck in one particular place. They torment themselves with what other people are doing, especially the people they love. They want to fix them, change them, heal them, set them straight, and get them into unity. And this is from people who know the five basic spiritual teachings that we use in unity. One, God is all there is, an absolute good. Human beings are inherently divine. Our thoughts have creative power. Prayer and meditation are our connection to the divine source. And we must live the truth we know, put it into action. Which sounds great, doesn't it? But the same people who know that, who could recite that backwards and forwards, are also the ones who sometimes complain and worry about their families and bosses and friends and what are those people doing and how they should live their lives better, and if only they knew what we know in unity. And I hear it so often, I think we need a sixth principle. Mind your own business. So turns out, this idea is not original with me. Ernest Holmes, the founder of Science of Mind, said, if we could add to the commandments, the greatest would be, mind your own business. Jesus said it too. He was more tactful. He said, seek first the kingdom of God, meaning focus on your higher self and your spiritual path. That's the work you're here to do. Everything else will fall into place. So let's shine a light on this. I believe there are three ways that we don't mind our own business. One is when we try to control other people. The second is when we let them control us. And the third is more global. It's worrying about conditions in the world and the people we believe are suffering. So let's start with our own control issues. Here's a clue. Every time you catch yourself using the word they or them or other people, especially in some critical way, you might not be minding your own business. This even comes up in discussions about the five principles. If God is absolute good, why are other people evil? If we're all divine, why are there terrorists and criminals and abusers? Why do they do such bad things? But the real motherlode of not minding our own business is with principle three. Our thoughts have creative power. We want to create our own experience, and everyone else's too. Then, of course, principle four is prayer. How many prayer requests are focused on other people and what we think is wrong in their lives and what they need help with? Money, love, health, jobs, all the things we want to improve for them. Every time we wish others would be different, every time we think they're not doing the right thing or their lives have run off the rails, or why doesn't he get a job, and why can't she stop drinking, and oh, those poor children. That's minding someone else's business. Think for a minute how much pain we cause ourselves by minding others' business. We let ourselves be miserable over what they are experiencing. Actually, the misery is in what we think about what they are experiencing. But you might say, I care about them. Do you know the definition of care? I looked it up. Suffering of mind, grief, a disquieted state of mixed uncertainty, apprehension, and responsibility, painstaking or watchful attention. I knew a couple of people in this church a few years ago who were diagnosed with cancer, and they didn't want to tell anyone at first because they didn't want people to care with apprehension, grief, and watchful attention. I think they were pleasantly surprised that their unity friends didn't do that. They held the high watch for them. Love is not the same as worry. Love does not pull our energy down. Love uplifts. It affirms the highest and best for each person in every situation. Example number two is when we let other people mind our business. Now again, this is something we're doing to ourselves. Wayne Dyer's book, Excuses Be Gone, talks about all the excuses we give for not being our best selves, not following our dreams. And one of the most common excuses is, my family would never stand for it, which is very similar to what would people think. Anytime we say we can't do something because others wouldn't like it, we're letting them mind our business. Anytime we worship at the altar of other people's approval, we're letting them mind our business. Terry Cole Whitaker wrote, "To the degree that I live my life in an effort to please others, I chip away at myself." And her book was titled, "What You Think of Me is None of My Business." So mind your own business swings both ways. It's letting other people live their lives, but it's also living our own lives, focusing on what's important to us regardless of others' opinions. And we do that by seeking first the kingdom of heaven, a closer walk with God, understanding that our own divinity is a life's work, and that's the business for us to be minding. Charles Fillmore, Unity's co-founder, said, "Remind yourself that the only authority you possess is over your own mind. That's the only authority you'll ever need, for the conditions under which you live reflect your thoughts." You might be willing to take responsibility for the creative power of your own thoughts, and you might sometimes forget that other people are creating their experience, especially if they look like victims to you. So, do you just shrug and let them suffer? For a long time, Unity did not get involved in social action because we were saying, life is consciousness. What can we do if someone is creating their own situation? The answer is, you can help at a physical level. You would put out a fire no matter what caused it. You can feed hungry people until they see a better life for themselves. And as we pursue what we're calling spiritual social action, we have to do it carefully, or we end up minding the business of the world, trying to fix them. That's the third way we have to learn to mind our own business, globally. People are starving. Children are abused. There are floods and famines and earthquakes and tsunamis and climate change and economic collapse and brutal dictators and refugees, and we feel a need to do something. We want to find who's to blame and make them stop. Principle 5 says we live the truth we know. We take action according to spiritual law. We just have to be careful that our action is not resistance. Protests, marches, rallies are very often forms of resistance, being against something. But we know what resists persists. We know what we focus on expands. That's the spiritual law. So if we're focused on what's wrong in the world, we're just giving energy to the problem. So how do you mind your own business and change the world for the better? How do we express love without interfering? How do we honor another's path when we see them headed for a train wreck? Minding your own business is just as difficult as living into the other five spiritual principles. It's especially tricky when you have children. When is it your business what they do, and when do you back off? Of course, you keep them from running into the street, but what if you don't like their friends? Is that your business, or is that their path? What if you don't like the way your adult children are raising your grandchildren? It helps me to remember that every soul comes to earth with a path and intentions. And I don't mean it's all predestined, but I do believe we come with broad goals of how we want to learn and grow, and then we attract the conditions to achieve that. Maybe that's why so many children go through hard times. There are so many painful childhoods. Some of us had them, and it's part of who we are now. We learned, we grew. Sometimes we were galvanized to teach and heal and help others, almost as if we chose it to jumpstart a life of learning and compassion. It's the same for anyone who appears to be suffering. People in poor countries, people at war, those caught in terror attacks. Their souls have paths and intentions we cannot know. So how do we love people and still mind our own business? I have four suggestions for practicing the sixth principle. First, remember they have their path in this lifetime and we have ours. Their path might look unnecessarily hard to us, and if we love them, we want to make it easier. But maybe that's just how they're learning their soul lessons. It really is none of our business whether someone lives or dies. It's their choice. It's none of our business whether they linger for years before they die. Who knows what soul work they might be doing in that time? None of our business who someone loves or how they relate. As a minister, I have married some couples that I thought were doomed. And another minister reminded me it's their path, they're creating their experience. And then she had the gall to remind me that I went through bad marriages too, and that was my path. So, yes, I would speak up about abuse, but even then, you may have to honor another's path even when it's difficult for them. They might need their experience for their growth. We can stick to our own paths, tend to our own souls. We can be supportive of them on their journey, and when we are in higher consciousness, we will be guided if there's any action we need to take. Second, we can't force other people to change, so we'll be more comfortable. I hate this one. But how much of our caring about other people takes the form of wanting them to do something different because we'd feel better? The only person you can change is yourself. You know that. My friend Laura Shepherd in California says she won't ask her husband to change anything just so she'll feel better. She says if something bothers her, it's her job to clean up her energetic vibration, her consciousness. She's the one attracting whatever behavior she doesn't like in the other person. That is hardcore minding your own business. But she's been married, I think, 28 years, and I never made it past 3, so what do I know? Third, we cannot create in someone else's experience, no matter how much we love them. We can't pray them alive if they're ready to die. We can't affirm them into prosperity or health if that's not in alignment with their consciousness and their soul choices. By the same token, and this is good news, we can't hurt them with our thoughts. I know mothers who worry that their fear will attract bad things to their children. If mothers' fears came true, no one would survive childhood. Children are their own creators, and most of them think they're invincible. And here's the fourth way to mind your own business. Stop labeling things good or bad. Most of what we want to change for other people is what we have labeled bad for them. And how many times has something you labeled bad turned out good in your own life? When you're in higher consciousness, even for a few minutes, labels disappear. Have you noticed that? Everything just is. We're minding our own business when we can just be on the journey and trust the process of life unfolding for ourselves and for others. So to summarize, mind your own business. Tend to your own spiritual path, your soul's growth. Clean up your own consciousness to attract something better. Honor the paths of others. They are creators too. And give up the labels and judgments. Surrender to the creative power of God in you, the higher self that does know what's best. If you want Bible backup for these teachings, the Apostle Paul wrote to the Ephesians, "The power at work within us is able to accomplish abundantly far more than all we can ask or imagine." You have that power within, and so does everyone you love. Remember, too, you can use the five principles as a checklist. And I find this not only comforting, but it reminds me of my divine identity and helps me return to a higher perspective of love. Number one, God is in every situation. There is no problem bigger than God. Two, other people truly are divine beings, and the power is at work within them too. Three, they are attracting and creating what they need for their soul's purposes in this life. And four is prayer. In prayer, we can only affirm their highest good because we don't know the best outcome for them. And five is to take action only when you are guided, when you are divinely inspired. That's how we live in principle. That's how we love other people and mind our own business. And we only have to practice that every day for a lifetime. So let's take these thoughts into meditation with Melinda.
Comfortable in your chair. There I am. And to breathe. Knowing that every breath, every inhale is a gift from God actively sustaining your life. And you have that intimacy with imminent and transcendent God, supporting in every moment. Now, as you breathe, continue to breathe deeply, think about the fact that everyone that you love, your children, your parents, your spouse, everyone that you worry about ever, everyone that you ever try to help or instruct, has exactly that same intimate, imminent relationship with that transcendent spirit. And just as you are on your perfect path, being told in every moment by your connection with spirit what is yours to do, what is yours to know, what is yours to say, what is yours to be? So we honor the people in our lives by allowing them to decide who they are, what they want to do, what they're to say, who they're to be through their own connection with Holy Spirit. Breathe into that for a minute. The expression that God has no grandchildren, only children. And see if that doesn't bring you some peace. So while you're busy creating your world, you don't have to ever feel guilty about not creating someone else's? And so what we can do, what we are here to do, I believe, is to give and receive love. Give and receive love from all of those people. When you send a prayer someone's way, it's just an extension of your love toward them. Your love supports them. You are a channel for God's love to flow through. And no decision needs to be made about that ever. You don't have to make a decision about, do they deserve it? Do I deserve it? It is always, always appropriate to love. And when we ask, for something for anyone else in prayer, we only say, dearest God, creator, one spirit in whom we live and breathe and have our being, my imagination, though it comes from you, is not the whole of your imagination. So I put my trust in the imagination of God and the imagination of Spirit to bring whatever is highest and best, whatever outworking, whatever outcome, whatever process needs to be in place. For the good of another, I trust you, God. Doesn't depend on me. As we continue to breathe, we can turn that back to ourselves. We also are given in each moment what is ours to be given. We are informed of what we need to know. We are directed in what we need to do. So ours is only to keep that connection through prayer, through meditation, through conscious contact with this one spirit that is all good, that is all love, that is God is. And all is well.